CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batts with Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host, and we're very pleased to welcome Andrew Collier, our colleague, Managing Director of Orient Capital Research. And the new book is China's Technology War, Why Beijing Took Down Why Beijing Took Down Its Tech Giants. Andy, a very good day to you. We come to a quote in Newsweek most recently from the Chinese embassy in Washington in response to various policies announced by the new Trump administration. The quote, "The U.S. has long used its dollar hegemony to shift crises, spread U.S. inflation to all other parts of the world, and make it become a geopolitical tool which damages international economic and financial stability and disrupts international order," said Liu. He went on to say, "This is in sharp contrast with the BRICS that include more inclusive and just financial policies." It sounds to me like the BRICS are unhappy with the Trump administration. What do they mean by dollar hegemony? Recently, the dollar goes up, the dollar goes down, just like the markets. Good evening to you, Andy.
Good evening. John, I mean, dollar hegemony basically means that most people want to transact international trade in the U.S. dollar because the United States has a very stable economy, very large economy, and we welcome to a great degree people to trade in the dollar and also to invest their money in the United States in things like stocks and bonds and also in U.S. treasuries. So that's for a lot of economic reasons. People are very happy to have a single currency that they can trust. However, it is true that if you have a dominant position and on an occasion you can use it for your geopolitical advantage, which the United States has done by targeting countries that they don't feel are adhering to their norms, such as Russia. But I don't think the Chinese have been complaining about this for some time. This is not really new news, and there's not much they can do about it because their economy just cannot match the United States' advantages in terms of their own currency.
Gordon, you have a question for Andrew.
Andrew, there's been talk of a BRICS currency. That would seem to me to be pretty unrealistic, but where are we on that?
Well, the BRICS that, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, I mean, they certainly are becoming more of a part of the global trading system just because their economies have been growing over the last several decades, although Russia is not doing so well these days. Unfortunately, for the reasons I just outlined, not a lot of people really want to rely on a separate currency because there's no political stability as much as we've had up until recently in the United States. And particularly in a place like China, they don't allow convertibility of the currency. So if you wanted to really trade in the renminbi, you'd have a tough time taking your money and investing it in China because they have a lot of rules about how much you can do with that. So I think that the gains that they've made have been fairly modest and unlikely to make much headway going forward.
The financial situation in China remains poor. It's non-transparent, so I have to do some guessing. The real estate is troubled. The consumption is poor. And there's a lack of vigor, what we call animal spirits. Is that true also in international investing in China, Andy?
Oh, yes, completely. I mean, investors, many of whom are my clients, basically wrote off China several years ago. And there's a bunch of reasons. I mean, the main reason you just pointed out is the property market went south quite sharply, partly because of government policies, but also because it was a debt-fueled bubble that was going to come to an end. The second problem is that people increasingly don't trust the legal environment in China under Xi Jinping because there's a lot of political interference. And for that reason, people are very shy of the whole situation. I just had a friend of mine is on the U.S. China Chamber of Commerce, lives in Beijing, was at my house last night. And he said that the recent meeting they had with Xi Jinping, most of the business leaders were perfectly happy to hear Xi Jinping talk about welcoming foreign investment, but they didn't trust what he said because there's not been a large demonstration of changes in domestic policies.
This is the meeting with Xi sitting behind flower pots? That's the meeting?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, they've been pushing this line about welcoming foreign investments because it's for them, it's free money. You come in and you start a business. But the international community is basically thinking, well, okay, we don't know if they'll change the rules on us. And we put up a $100 million plant. And then the next day they say, well, gee, we're going to sanction that plant for various reasons. So they don't trust the operating environment. And the international investment funds like Fidelity and so forth, they also are saying, well, what's going on? I mean, they're investing heavily in semiconductors, but they don't really have a lot of winners yet. And the property market is killing the economy. So we're not going to do any equity trading, stocks and bonds there yet for now.
Gordon, you have a question.
There's been a bounce in the Chinese stock market this year. What do people say about that?
Well, there's certain sectors, you know, that have done relatively well. You see healthcare, you see a few tech companies that have had a bounce back. Jack Ma of Alibaba, which is the Amazon of China, is slightly in favor now. So his company is getting a little more attention. So the market is very thinly traded and you basically got a few sectors, but that doesn't represent the economy as a whole.
What do they do about the property market? What we do is we take a recession for 20 years. Can they do that?
Well, I'm actually doing a fellowship at Harvard to write a book on the property market right now, and there's not much they can do. They are going to follow Japan to some degree in having a long, steady slide because they use debt, trillions and trillions of dollars of debt to create this bubble, and the bubble's collapsing, and they have nothing really to replace it in terms of a new economic sector. So I expect some long-term pain because of the fact they relied on that bubble for several decades.
25 years, Andy, like Japan's?
Probably. My guess is less than that because I think that the provinces are going to have to throw themselves into new businesses. And I'm a little more optimistic than some of my colleagues on this because I think that even though the party is very strong in China, there's a lot of local business activity that's going to have to sort of get in gear. So we're going to see that happen over the next 5 or 10 years.
Gordon, you have a question.
Andy, you've been a leader in talking about hidden debts and the problems of local governments. Where do local governments now stand?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, China's unusual in that 80% of expenditure is actually from the local governments. It's as if Texas basically got very little money from Washington and did most of its revenue and taxes on its own. So what they do is important. They're running larger and larger deficits, so they have less money. People are getting laid off in local governments. And businesses are having a tougher time getting money to start up from local governments. So they don't have much that they can do, except what they really should be doing is taking money away from the state companies that are not very efficient and allowing small businesses to flourish. But part of the problem is Xi Jinping is pushing technology to such a degree that local government officials are rated by how much business they bring in on a list of sort of high tech areas. So if you're a company with lots of employees making widgets, you know, the government's central government is saying, well, we really don't care about widgets. But unfortunately, widget makers employ a lot of people. So there's a lot of interference from Beijing that's not helping matters very much.
Andrew Collier, Managing Director of Orient Capital Research. His book is China's Technology War, Why Beijing Took Down Its Tech Giants. Gordon Chang.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.